The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com. I am the man, sick with the slang, sick and I'm destined for fame. Do for the fam, not for the gram, stunt me, destined for pain. I do not front, I do not scam, put some respect on my name. Sick like a bane, click and I bang, y'all gon' remember the name. Y'all gon' remember the name. What's up, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls around the world? I would like to welcome you back to another episode of the Real Talk with Zuby podcast. Now, on today's episode, we have got on an awesome content creator. She's got a YouTube channel with well over 100,000 subscribers. She's an awesome socio-political commentator and an all-around interesting human being. And this is the one and only, Gothix. How you doing?
I am doing fabulous. That was an amazing intro. Thank you so much.
Fantastic. Is that the Queen's Wave right there you're doing?
That is, right there. You like that?
I like that. I like that. So do I call you Gothix or do I call you Vanessa, first of all?
You can call me either. Gothix is just better for marketing, but Vanessa is just my name.
Awesome. And where did that name come from, Gothix? That's kind of unique.
Yeah, I mean, growing up, I was a goth, and that was sort of my real username was Gothix Model. And then once I got into streaming, doing video game content, I was like, you know what? I'll just use this name as my brand name. And I've had it for like 15 years.
Awesome. So for people who aren't familiar with who you are and what you do, tell them a little bit about you.
Yeah, totally. So as you mentioned, my name is Vanessa. I am born and raised in Rhode Island. I got my start on Twitch.tv as a video game content creator. I also did some live improv over there and built a career for myself doing that for about like 3 years. And now I'm just now getting into social and political commentary over on YouTube, making, I guess, think pieces, if you will. I still don't know what I'm doing. I'm just winging it, by the way. And yeah, it's definitely different. I like it. And yeah, pretty much just making content is what I do.
That's awesome. And your channel has been growing really, really quickly. When did you really start taking YouTube seriously?
I want to say it was honestly last year. I think it was the end of September after witnessing, you know, a year long of COVID lockdowns and peaceful protests. I said, you know what, I have a lot I'd like to speak about. So let me just dust off this YouTube channel and try making some content, see what happens. Going into it knowing I'm probably going to get a really bad response from the public. But it turns out it's actually the majority of people like what I do. And I think it has to do with how much society is lacking rational conversation as of late. Yeah.
Why did you think you were going to get a negative response?
So this was just from experience. While I was still on Twitch doing my video game stuff, I started to see, you know, the peaceful protests. And I noticed that the Twitch platform in particular, it was not very tolerant to ideas that are not progressive or left-leaning. And so when these protests started, I took to Twitter and I just asked a very honest question, you know, what does robbing stores have to do with police brutality? Like, how does that help? How does it make sense? And a lot of people did not like me having the audacity to ask that question. I thought that was a little bit ridiculous. It's just a question and it's an honest one. Mm-hmm. So I went into it just basing it off of those interactions. I can't even ask questions anymore without people getting upset. So me actually being honest and just upfront about my opinions on the state of the world would probably get me some bad comments, which, yeah, I did get some and I still get them, but I think the positive ones outweigh the negative, definitely.
That's interesting. So I'm curious to know a little bit about your background, especially as someone who now does socio-political commentary and talks about what's going on in the culture and what's happening in the world. What's been your own journey through that?
Yeah, so to be perfectly honest with you, prior to 2020, politics, no interest to me. And to be honest with you, I still am not really interested, but I need to know what's going on. It's unfortunately, I have to involve myself. But I would say prior to 2020, I was, I guess the way to describe it, an emotional voter, perhaps. Someone that thought very, I wouldn't say as emotional as a lot of, you know, these other people, but I was, I still had that mindset. Like, for example, one of my best friends voted for Trump. And when she did that the first time, my instant reaction was, "You're racist. Why are you voting for a racist? You must hate me. I'm black." And that's not a logical, looking back at it, that's not a logical conclusion. So I definitely think a lot more critically now than I did back then. And the only reason I'm invested in what's happening is because, like, let's be real, it's kind of hard to ignore the state of the world and not question what is really happening right now. This is too much chaos going on at one time. And I'm not just buying the fact that all of a sudden, you know, everyone in the world is racist and everyone in the world is suffering from some type of systematic oppression. I don't buy that. So I had to inform myself, and that's where I am now.
No doubt. Did you used to buy it? What do you say?
A little bit. Yeah.
That's interesting. So when you said you had a friend who voted for Trump and then you accused them of racism, I'm kind of intrigued to dig into this. Where did that come from? Why did you associate voting for Trump with racism?
To be honest, I think it had to do with the media. Because this person, they had mentioned recently, because full context, we're actually, I'm in the process of having a documentary filmed about me, which is pretty cool. And they interviewed her for the documentary, and I saw like a rough draft of it and stuff. And she mentioned in passing an email that I had sent to her after I found out that she voted for Trump. So I went the other day and looked up this email, and it was, I was describing things that I basically was regurgitating from CNN, and I didn't even realize it back then. And I don't know, it was just like just standardized talking points. And then when I look back at the letter, I'm like, this doesn't make any sense. I don't understand what I'm saying. I'm just regurgitating it. And I think a lot of people do that and don't realize it until they're actually forced to really consider how much they know about a specific topic.
And what forced you to consider that on a deeper level?
I honestly think it was this past year when I started to see how a lot of society was very public about their hatred towards specifically Trump supporters. Just that generalizing of Trump supporters confused me, but it also kind of relayed my behavior back to me. And I said, is this how I was acting? This is terrible. So it was one of those things where I'm like, I need to deprogram myself from this and lead by example by showing people that you can't just generalize a group of people based on things that you hear from a third party, because these third parties might not even be on your side. It could just be like they're just playing the game. And yeah, that's how I see it.
Yeah, no, it's really interesting. I'm always intrigued when someone's had that kind of wake up moment and then gone through that journey of, okay, wait, hang on. I had a wrong assumption here.
Yeah.
Right. Because it's a big shift. Cause you know, it's intriguing, especially with me, because I'm someone I've become more libertarian over time, but I haven't really shifted much politically throughout my lifetime. I'd say even as a child, I was not political as a child at all. But if you'd sort of polled me on various issues, I guess I would have always come out center right of the spectrum. So I'm not someone who's kind of had that thing of like, oh, you know, like I used to be a lefty or a liberal and I kind of, you know, went through this journey and became more conservative. So I'm always intrigued when someone had a certain belief system or a certain set of assumptions and then something challenged that and it forced them or encouraged them to go and dig deeper into the issue. Because a lot of people don't do that. I mean, to this day, you've still got people who think, oh, everyone who voted for Trump was just racism. Right. Or everyone, even in the UK, everyone who voted for Brexit, it's because they're racist and, you know, they hate immigrants. Right. There's still people who it's kind of a cope. Right. Because it means that you don't have to deal with anything complicated. You can just say, oh, you know what? 50% of the country is just evil and hateful.
That's it.
And that's it, right? It's simple, right? You know, it's good versus evil. It's that simple. I'm on the good side of good. They're on the side of bad. Done. But then, of course, if you interact with people in the real world and you have people, you know, like your friend, this is a friend, right? You know, this is a good person, right? You know that they're a good person. So you'd think that would tell people, okay, well, it can't be that simple because you've got a friend or a family member or whatever who you know is a good person and they did vote that way or they do believe in that thing. So doesn't that sort of indicate to you that it's not that simple? But then some people would rather just cancel those friends and get rid of those friendships rather than actually take a moment to be like, ah, okay, why did you vote for Trump? You know, let me not just assume it's for the worst reason it could possibly be, because that's what the media said. Let me understand, okay, why do you hold that position? And you don't need to agree, right? It could just be like, okay, cool, you know what, I still don't like him or whatever, but I get where you're coming from. So really, I'm saying that to kind of shout out to you for, I respect anyone who's able to do that, because it takes a level of humility and honesty and curiosity as well, just to be, oh, okay, I was wrong about something. You know? Yeah. People don't like doing that.
Yeah, thank you. And then when it happened to me with my friends this past year, I thought the same thing. I'm like, we've had such a close friendship. So in my head, if I was in this position, I would be thinking at this point, why would they do this? Are they really just a terrible person? Or is there a reason why they decided to vote the way that they did? And it's crazy that pretty much everyone that stopped being my friend never bothered to have that discussion with themselves. But there is one thing that I will say, is that I think the peer pressure from society, whether it's like the media or all of your friends doing the same thing, also contributes to people behaving in the way that they do. Because even with me, I've felt that kind of pull from peer pressure, where I would change my opinions on things without even realizing it. Like, for example, there's this narrative that, you know, it's harder for Black content creators to succeed. And when I started doing content creation, I didn't have that idea in my head, but someone planted that in my head. Mm. And then, you know, a few months after I started getting into streaming, I can go back and look at tweets, and the way that I was advertising myself was sort of like, look at me, I'm a Black woman, come support me. That was my shtick, I'm a Black woman. Gotcha. And then once I started to grow as a creator, I realized this isn't really true. This rhetoric isn't true. So I dropped that. But that's one of those instances where I just felt that pressure of misery, like, hey, we're miserable and we want you to think just like us so you can also be miserable. Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, it really is. And that's something else that you talk about a lot in your videos, is the whole racial narrative, right? Especially in the USA. That's something that, you know, we have it in the UK, but the USA is way more race obsessed than the UK is. You know, it's, you know, we've got Black Americans, white Americans, Asian Americans. What, you know, you'll notice in the UK, people just say British, right? Like, people don't say, oh, you know, Zuby's Black British or African British. It's just British. You know, we don't say Asian British, white British, unless someone's doing like a census form or something. But those are not, that's not common terminology. And to the degree that it is, it's largely imported from the USA. So people like to import these racial narratives from the USA. Now they want to import critical race theory and kind of adopt this way of thinking. But there's more, it's just not so much embedded in the culture here. And it always sort of intrigues me when I do see those sort of narratives. Or like you said, people say, oh, you know, if you're Black, then you got to work 3 times harder or 10 times harder, which I've always found interesting, by the way, because I'm always like, well, how would you even know that? You know, have you been white before? Right. How do you know how hard? Right. It's sort of this notion that, you know, every white person just sort of shows up and all of a sudden, you know, they're like, they have a huge, they're just successful in whatever. And I'm like, well, that's not real life, is it? You know, last time I checked, I was actually doing really well. And so were lots of my Black friends. And I've seen a lot of white people who are, you know, I'm not convinced that it's, you know, they have it 10 times easier. You know, if someone wanted to say like 10% or something, I'd be like, maybe I can entertain that possibly. But when someone's like, you know, it's 3 times harder, it's 10 times harder, maybe, you know, it's hyperbole. But I don't know. I think it's I think it's a narrative that actually holds people back, you know, in many in many ways. Right? I think there's this weird thing that happens where, you know, a lot of Black people, let me be honest, and I think this can happen with any minority or any group who society looks at as being disadvantaged in some way. It could be women. You know, women are not a minority, but it could be women. It could be, you know, Black people, just non-white people in general, people who are, you know, and it creates this, how would I put it? Because, you know, I always think, like, if you feel the game is rigged, then you're less likely to play it to the best of your ability.
Right.
Because there's not much point. So if you go into the game thinking, oh, okay, you know, the system is already against me, then I think that actually causes a lot of people to not even try. And I think actually that holds back a lot of people because they have this assumption that, oh, well, you know, the game is rigged anyway. So, you know, if I'm playing a sports match against someone or something and, you know, the referee is totally biased and is on their side, right? I'm like, well, what's the point in playing this game? Because, you know, I'm not gonna go as hard. So I think people kind of give up sometimes before they've really tried, and then it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy because then they'll say, oh, well, you know, that was because of systemic racism, or, you know, it's just so hard for a woman, or it's so hard for a Black. It's like, you know what? If you didn't have all those assumptions and you just went in there. Like, the truth is, in 2021, most people do not care. people don't care. Like, if you're dope and you make good stuff and you add value to the world, people don't care if you are straight, gay, trans, lesbian, Black, brown, white, atheist, Christian. Like, people don't care. Like, make dope content and you'll be good.
Right. And I think I also, it pains me to say this, I think a lot of people have a very entitled mindset. I think they assume because I think I'm doing good stuff, that must be true. And that's not always true. And one pattern that I've seen from, you know, just looking in the content creator space of people who are Black that complain that they're not seeing success, a lot of them kind of regurgitate this narrative of I am Black, therefore that is the reason I'm not getting success. And the successful people that I see who share the same skin color as I do don't talk about that stuff. So I think sometimes it comes down to a matter of your mindset and also just your attitude. And people don't consider that. They just, what do you mean something's wrong with my attitude? Well, imagine always hearing this, I'm sorry, this pitiful script. So, you know, I can't do this because I'm Black. It's like this invisible ceiling that I don't want to pity you. I want to watch your content. I want to see your good content. I think if people just stopped focusing on the exterior and actually focused on the things that matter, then we'd be good.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting because it's something we do as human beings, right? I think because we are at the center of our own individual world. And people have their own insecurities and hang-ups, and they have so much knowledge about themselves even that I think when people are kind of going around online or offline, they assume that everyone else is like analyzing them. And that's like, I'm like, dude, the reality is most people don't care about you. they're in their own head. They're not looking at you like, she's a woman. And she's Black and she's got a nose ring and she's this and she's got like they're not looking at you that hard. They're just like they're just seeing people. Right. Unless something causes them to, you know, really pay attention to you. Like people are in their own heads. And I think that's how the mindset, you know, people have this self-defeating mindset where thinking, oh, everyone's, you know, looking at me like this or that. I'm like, dude, that's your own hang up. Unless you're living in some crazy backwards place where, okay, people are genuinely, like very genuinely bigoted, you know, which may exist. But if you're in the West, UK, USA, Canada, whatever, probably pretty hard to find a whole area like that. There might be an individual, and even that individual doesn't really care about you. Even if they have some bias or prejudice in their head, as long as they're not there trying to railroad you and block you from living your life and being happy, you know, people don't like it when I say this, but people are I believe people are entitled to their prejudices. Mm-hmm. Right? It doesn't mean that it's good or that they should act upon them. But if they have like some thought in their head, if I'm walking down the street, oh, and there actually is some guy who in his brain is like, ooh, you know, big, scary Black guy or something. Number one, I don't know. Yeah, but right. even if they are thinking it, it's like, I don't care unless like, if he comes and, you know, says something to me or attacks me, like that's a different story. But if it's just like in his head, it's like, okay, you know, you're wrong, but like you're allowed to have your prejudice, you know, just don't let that manifest in the real world.
Exactly. That's the exact way that I view it. I live on just like live and let live principles. And I understand that people, there's always going to be a supply of people that just don't like you for one reason or another. And when, if we were to tackle racism on top of that, let's say someone calls me the N-word, okay. And like, what could you logically do in that situation? Are you just going to be combative with every single person that you encounter throughout your life that says something mean or harsh to you? I can't be bothered with that. I have things to do. And I think when people hear that, they think, oh, you're downplaying racism or you're ignoring racism. I'm realistic, and I understand that the world is ugly. It has flaws and there is no utopia. And for you to try to get rid of one problem, you're just going to create another set of problems.
Of all the content you've put out there, what's been the thing that's gotten the biggest reaction?
I think all of the stuff that I've made has different types of reactions. And they're all unique in their own way. But I think the one that might have pissed people off the most was my video on race hustlers. And okay. Yeah, I get a lot of comments in that, like people don't want to consider the reality that there are people out there that make a living exploiting other people's trauma, pain, you know, and, you know, like we saw with, you know, we got Black Lives Matter over here buying mansions and it's not quite matching up to the narrative of what the movement is supposed to do. That's a hard pill to swallow, especially if you spent a good portion of last year protesting, marching, you know, virtue signaling. No one wants to feel like they've been deceived, and I get that. So I think all of my videos kind of do that, but the ones in particular dealing with like Black issues, where I point out things that are happening within Black American culture, those usually get the most angry responses.
And who are the angry responses from primarily? Is there a certain
black leftists, okay, and white leftists?
I was thinking, but I didn't want to make an assumption.
yes, and the white leftists are the most inappropriate comments I get, more than the Black, because I can at least understand from the Black perspective, just being derogatory towards another Black person. Like, I am used to this. I have been called every name in the book. But then when you have someone who is white that is claiming to be against racism, but is overtly racist towards me because they've somehow gotten the free pass from Black leftists, that's where things get really dicey, and it happens a lot. And it's like, do you not see your hypocrisy? Do you not?
Yeah. Was that new to you? Did that surprise you?
This is new to me. This is new to me. I got political commentators on YouTube calling me white supremacist. Okay.
Welcome to the party. Welcome to the party.
Yes, it's very new to me. I don't understand it. This is a very weird space.
Do you know what's really interesting is because, like I said, because I've always been someone who's leaned more conservative, I've been very aware of this for like well over a decade, right? Because there are a lot of people who in the mainstream world, there's this narrative that racism is a right-wing thing. And I've, for a long time, I've been like, no, it is absolutely not. Even for my teenage years, I was like, no, it is not. It might have like different flavors, you know, like it might come across in a different way, but I'm like, it's just not. But I think it's only in recent times where more and more people are starting to see what I've been talking about, when I'm like, okay, well, disagree with that person and see what the response is, right? Like if you disagree with a white conservative and you disagree with a white leftist, like the white leftist in general is more likely to bring out the racial epithets and the slurs. They're more likely to actually not truly see you as an equal with your own mind and your own ideas, your own ability to vote, whatever. It's like this, there's the combination of the bigotry of low expectations, and then this kind of like, I know more about what it's like to be black than you do, despite never having been for a day. I don't truly view you as an equal because I've got this thing called white privilege, and you're actually kind of beneath me, you person of color, you know, you BIPOC. And there's this real like sort of, I don't want to say this is everybody, right? But especially amongst like the more kind of like woke progressive end, it's very, you know, I often say they talk as if black people are like pets.
Yeah.
You know, like you're not supposed to go off script. And if you do, you know, they'll be the one telling you to educate yourself. And I'm like,
right.
The audacity of that.
Really?
I'm kinda, you know what I mean? I'm like, kind of like, come on, you know? And then there's just this lack of self-awareness. It's very rare for someone like that to take a minute and go, actually, wait, hang on. I just called a black person a white supremacist. Like, maybe I'm in the wrong.
Right.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, it's, and I get it all the time, too, whenever I talk about the left. People think I'm always picking on them. But, like I've been a Democrat voter pretty much my entire life. Like, the Democrat, you know, vicinity is just what I'm used to. I always avoided people that were conservative or Republican, just straight up Republican, like the plague, because of what I heard from other people.
Yes.
And so I think that part of the issue is that people that are kind of entrenched in this sort of leftist ideology don't even realize what's happening because they've sort of normalized it. Like if I go back and I watch, for example, CNN talking about, I don't know, Senator Tim Scott or something like that from years ago, they'll say the most racist things on television and it's fine. It's just normal. No one bats an eye. And I only noticed this when I pulled myself out of that environment and objectively started looking at things. And I think when you start to see a pattern of, you know, a lot of people on the left just being normalizing racism while pointing blame at the other side, that's something up with the ideology that people need to pay attention to. You know, we can say that, oh, it's both sides that do it. Yeah, there's racism on both sides. But when there is a big pattern, you have to start looking at, okay, what is the ideology? Where are these people picking up these things? And why is it in their head okay to behave in the way that they do? It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, the thing that frustrates me with, you know, what I'll call the, you know, like left-wing racism is that people get away with it. Right. It's not like I don't even like using the terms the left and the right, but the right polices its racism a lot better. Right. So if, you know, no one on the right was standing with those, you know, because if people always be like, oh, well, what about Charlottesville? I'm like, bro, everybody, every conservative, every prominent conservative condemned that. That people weren't there like saying, oh, you know, oh, yeah, what happened at Charlottesville? Like that was fine. Right. And the fact people even have to reach back that far for it. But it's like people were not OK with that. People weren't saying, oh, actually, yeah, we're going to defend these guys. We're going to stand with them, whatever. But on the opposite end, people are less willing to, you know, draw that line or call things out as long as the person that they're being racist towards. Or this goes also for sexism. This also goes for homophobia. All the phobias and isms, if it's directed at someone who's on the right side of the political spectrum, then it's like, actually, that's all right. You know, like we'll be okay with that. Even if we don't condemn it, like we'll just be either at best, we'll be quiet. At worst, we'll actually, you know, encourage it. And that's how you end up with, you know, people throwing out these terms at each other. And I'm just kind of like, wow, okay, this is very hypocritical. And the fact that this is normalized, or, you know, even if you're now talking about what's been happening in certain institutions, in academia, this push of, you know, so-called critical race theory and these ideas of going back to viewing people based on their color of their skin and, you know, segregating dorm rooms in universities and this and that. I'm just like, guys, because I oftentimes I just think, okay, what if right wingers did this, right? Mm-hmm. So remember when they had the whole like Chaz Chop autonomous zone in Portland?
Yeah.
Can you imagine if that was a group of Trump supporters?
Oh,
we literally took over a part of the city, created an autonomous zone, which was racially segregated.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, this would, they would drop a bomb on it. Like, they would blow up.
Yes. Not even think twice. It would be done.
And they just let them go for weeks. I was like, this is crazy, man. This is the double standard here.
Yeah, it's crazy. And yeah, critical race theory is a whole different monster. I actually just got done with a very underwhelming debate on my channel where I debated two pro critical race theory intellectuals whom were white. And okay. I don't really like bringing race into things, but I think it's very important to acknowledge that if we're talking about white supremacy and, you know, equality and all this stuff, the irony of having two white men tell a black woman, hey, this is what you need. You need this because we know what's better for you.
Yeah, it's so strange. And it's so strange to me when people just don't see the irony or the hypocrisy in some of these things. You'd think you'd just be like, hang on, let me, you know, like, This happens in different fields, you know, when people start calling, you know, I don't know, Ben Shapiro a Nazi.
Yeah, because that makes sense.
Yeah, you'd think you'd be like, wait, hang on. I'm calling a Jewish guy, who's a like a well-known Orthodox practicing Jew who wears a yarmulke, who actually has ancestors who, you know, perished in the Holocaust. I'm calling him maybe I'm wrong, you know, like maybe. Or okay, I'm here lecturing a black woman as a white guy about what she should think about, you know, being a black woman or white supremacy. It's like, maybe I should like just be a little bit quiet here and, you know, just kind of listen and have some humility and understand, oh, actually maybe she doesn't share my perspective on this, not because she has some sort of internalized racism or sexism, but because she has her own mind and views and, you know,
yeah.
But a lot of people don't do that.
No, they don't. Or they just call me Candace Owens after the debate. So, which is, you know, and you know, that is one of the most common insults that I get from white people. They compare me to black conservatives that they vilified for one reason or another. It's usually Candace Owens. Mm-hmm. I am myself. I don't strive to be anyone. I'm sorry if I gave off that impression. Mm-hmm. But it's just like, it's so, I don't know. It's so bizarre. I don't even know how we got to this point. Sometimes I just wonder like, okay.
Yeah. It's because people don't get checked on it. That's literally why it is. That's kind of what I was saying. So, you know, more on the right, like if someone does say something that's like, you know, like legitimately racist, people will be like, yo, no, like,
yeah,
no,
right.
Like, right. You know, when there are with someone actually promoting like some form of legit white supremacy or white nationalism, like people are like, no, man, like, no.
Right.
But that doesn't really happen so much. It's a bit like how, Antifa gets away with what they do.
Right. Right. Right.
If Antifa was a right, if there was like a right wing equivalent of Antifa that was literally, you know, setting fire to buildings, bombing places, like creating autonomous zones, and people are, they'll get shut down so quickly by their own side. Even people would be like, no, you can't do that. It won't just be like, oh, well, you know, they're angry and they've got a good name. They're called anti-fascist. So it's okay. You know,
it's in the name. Duh.
It's just an idea. You know, as Biden said, you know, Antifa, it's just an idea. And so they all sort of, they all quietly, you know, some people will openly support them, but a lot of people will excuse and, you know, turn a blind eye to what they're doing. And so I think that's how it gets to that level, because no one has actually just put them in their place and been like, yo, I mean, I've put a lot of people in their place like that. I actually quite enjoy it. Like when people, you know, when it goes to a certain level, yeah. I'm like, all right, I got to air this person out because they're way out of order here, you know?
Yeah.
And I can see that no one's ever done this to them before. Like no one's ever just said, yo, you're, you know, like, let me tell you about yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. I try not to do that because in my head, I understand, like, if someone's yelling at me or cussing me out, like, I'm not receptive to that. That's not going to make me want to engage with them.
Yeah.
So in my head, I'm like, okay, try to be as neutral as possible. Even though they're combative or nasty, I'm just going to try to be as neutral and just kill them with kindness. But sometimes, sometimes you gotta just, you know, just use your voice a little bit. And you know what the ironic thing about this is, like, even these individuals that I debated on critical race theory, when after the fact they're calling me Candace Owens on Twitter, that interaction alone, right? That interaction alone should be enough proof to show you that critical race theory or ending racism will never happen. It's not going to work. It's a pipe dream, because you are being hateful towards me because I apparently am a Black woman that doesn't think in the manner that you want me to, perhaps. And then if I get, you know, racist remarks from other Black people who shield behind the whole Black people can't be racist excuse, that right there is proof that racism will never go away, because people aren't treating it like it's a serious issue. Because if you were serious about it, you would hold yourself to the same standards as everyone else, would you not? So it's just people's actions alone tell me that that is why racism will never go away.
Yeah, for real. And a lot of people don't want it to. That's the truth. That is literally the truth, right? You were talking about race hustlers in that video, and they need it. It's a multi-billion dollar industry, right? If not racism, then the illusion of it. It's literally, it's profitable, right? If that disappeared, then what would all these activists and authors and people who have dedicated their whole life and who are earning six, seven figure incomes from stoking all of these tensions and stirring these pots, what are they going to do, right? They're toast. So I think people want to keep it alive for two reasons. Number one, for that. But then also, I think for some people, it's a permanent alibi. It's a permanent excuse, right? If you can always blame something on systemic racism or institutional racism, or, you know, it goes beyond race, you know, the patriarchy or this or that, heteronormativity. It's like a permanent excuse for your own failings, right? Because anytime you fail, you can just say, oh, well, it was that thing. It was that ghost. I mean, and these terms are even very annoying, because at least if you're talking about direct individual racism, people know what that means and it's clear and it's targeted and it's focused. But if someone just says systemic racism, structural racism, institutional racism, and you ask them, okay, well, which system, which structure, which institution? And, you know, they never have this. They play this whole game, this linguistic game, where you can never actually find the problem. It's this ghost that's permeates everywhere. That's the critical race theory, right? Hey, racism is everywhere. Yes. And it's up to you to find it and to call it out and to do the work to, you know, get rid of this ghost. But the ghost can't be killed because it's a ghost and it's always there.
Yeah. And that's something that I've always tried doing with people, is when I see people complaining about systemic racism, you know, what I found is that a lot of people are just regurgitating this narrative of systemic racism. They have not experienced it themselves, or they don't even know someone who experienced it. It's just the news or their friends mention it, and now they're just repeating it. So when I see someone like that, I'll ask them, have you yourself experienced systemic racism? And they'll usually say, oh, not me, but what about someone else? I don't care about someone else. I have yet to find someone that can actually pinpoint how systemic racism has affected their life. Because what I want to do in that conversation is sort of reverse engineer what happened. So if they're saying that, for example, systemic racism prevented me from getting this job, I'd be like, okay, what happened at the job interview? And why did this happen? Because sometimes, actually, I'll say a lot of the times, it's personal choice. It's just bad decisions. And people want to evade personal responsibility, which sounds really harsh, but that's the truth. Because I'm someone who is a high school dropout. I was homeless for a little bit. I did not have the best upbringing. So I find it weird that me and people in worse situations than I have been able to pull ourselves out of bad predicaments and be fine in life. Meanwhile, we have other people that are blaming everyone in the system for all their problems. I don't get it. And I know it's BS, because how many times have these people complaining sought mentorship from the people that are doing good? You know what I mean? Like, I've never had people approach me and say, hey, you're growing so much on YouTube. Can you show me how to grow on YouTube? No, they'll just get on Twitter and complain that I'm tap dancing for the white man. Like, that's that's not how you're fixing it. You're not serious. And I think it's just, it's an ego thing sometimes.
It is. I mean, you know why they attack you, right?
Well, it's clearly because I'm tap dancing.
You're not doing the moves right. No, it's because you're like, you hold up a mirror to them.
Yeah.
Right? You hold up a mirror to them because you coming from your background and, you know, being a black woman, you know, who is supposed to be, according to the rules of this game, right? You're supposed to be doubly, triply oppressed, perhaps.
All right.
And so if you're successful, then it really highlights other people's failings. Like, if you were not successful, then you fit the narrative, right? And they can be like, oh, well, right? See, you know, black women can't do X, Y, Z because, look, like, you know, they're not doing it. But if someone does do it, there's sort of two responses to that. Number one, you can be inspired and be motivated and react positively and be like, oh, awesome, cool. Like, they're actually paving the way and this is, you know, it's good that that's breaking the narrative. Or people get mad because it's breaking the narrative and it's like, oh, wait, hang on. That makes me look bad. It's a bit like if someone's, you know, like if someone's really out of shape and then this even happens in relationships. Like if there's a relationship where like there's a boyfriend and a girlfriend and they're both out of shape and one of them gets in good shape and the other one does not, you can normally put a countdown timer on that relationship. Mm. I've seen this many, many times because it makes the other person feel very insecure and uncomfortable. If they both lose weight, it's all good. If they both stay fat, it's all good. If one of them stays fat and the other one loses weight, then they don't like that. They don't like that. The resistance comes from the other person because it shows them. It's like, oh, well, when we were both fat, I was comfortable with that because, you know, there was no, my flaws were not really being shown. But and if that by you losing weight, all my excuses are gone, right? I was there saying, oh, it's my genetics or it's the stuff they put in the food or it's the advertising or it's this or that. But then it's like, oh, well, someone that close to you managed to do it. So right. What's your excuse, buddy? And people don't like that.
All right. And I don't know why, because that's a part of life. That's how you get better. That's how you grow. I doubt everyone knew instantly how to do something the first time that they tried it. They probably have to get better at it. So I find it odd that a lot of people try to avoid this sort of, you know, tough love, because that's ultimately how you learn, how you get better. Do you want to suck the rest of your life? If so, then just keep ignoring that. But I mean, I don't know. I want people to be able to give me that criticism so I can and grow. And it's disappointing. I don't know. I wonder if it has something to do with upbringing, too.
Probably. You know, I always say the most important thing is mindset. You know, if you show me somebody's mindset, then if I know someone's mindset, then I know what life trajectory they're on, regardless of what they start from, whether they start rich or they start poor or, you know, regardless of race, gender, ethnicity, whatever. If they have a what I call a winner mindset, then given enough time, they will win. They will be successful and they will be happy. If they don't, even if they're coming from a, you know, with the odds in their favor, if they have that loser mentality, they're not going to succeed and they're not going to be happy. It's just a given. And so to me, everything begins with mindset. Like you could take, again, you know, using that analogy, right? You can take two people who are overweight or even obese, okay? And if one of them has the mindset of, you know what, I don't like this, I'm going to do something about it and I'm going to commit to it and I'm going to do it, and they're truly on that, you know, okay, within a year, this person's going to look completely different. Mm-hmm. And if the other person has the mentality of, you know, this isn't my fault, it's the fault of this, it's the fault of that, they're just making excuses and they don't want to get to the gym, they don't want to eat better, whatever, they're just making every excuse, you know, okay, in a year, this person's going to look the same, if not fatter. And mindset's not permanent. It can always be changed. But until people change it, you can predict what trajectory they're going to be on. And when you look at successful people, they're not haters, right? Like they're not haters. They're people who will see success. And I mean, before we jumped on this podcast, I was like, yo, congrats on your YouTube growth, right? Like I've been watching and I love it. It's not my channel. And I'm like, yo, I love seeing this. I've got lots of friends with, you know, when I see people growing on Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, I'm like, yo, congratulations on 100K. Well done. You hit 50K, 10K. Awesome. Well done. Right. And it's genuine. It's not forced. Like I'm happy for that. But with some people, they think everything is a, zero-sum game. So by you having 100,000 subscribers, that's taking away from me, right? By you achieving this or you making more money, that's me making less money. Or by you doing that, and that's not how life, there's very few situations where that's the case in life, right? There's a lot of different games you can play, and actually everybody can be successful. But I think that resentment is when people think that the only way you can succeed or get rich or be successful is by taking away from them. Oh, that guy's dating a hot girl. Oh, she would have dated me if it weren't for him. So I'm going to hate on him now. And it's like, no, it doesn't work like that. Like, you know, and if the person with the right mentality would be like, oh, you know what? Why don't you talk to that guy and be like, yo, dude, how did you get such a hot girl, man? Right? See the guy with the Lambo. Guy comes up in a Lambo. Some people would be like, oh, he's compensating. He's got a small penis.
Mm-hmm.
Other people are like, what does that guy do? What does that guy do, right? Can I get some? He's got a Lambo. I want a Lambo. Let me talk to him, right? Like, that's my approach, right? He might know something that I don't. Oh, this girl's grown 100K on YouTube in 6 months. Let me send her a DM and see, hey, you know, I'm starting out. What did you do to grow? Can you help me, et cetera?
Right.
You know, can I interview you on my channel? That's the different mentality there.
Yeah, I really started paying attention to that type of mentality when I started to make the transition over to YouTube, because a lot of people weren't happy with me doing that. Apparently, I'm just supposed to play video games the rest of my life and just make jokes, and that's it. That's just what I do. So when I started talking about more serious stuff, a lot of people's perception about me started to shift. And I want to say the bulk of individuals that were really hostile towards me were those that I had previously offered advice for on how to grow in the creator space. People that I had either coached, or there was this one person in particular that emailed me maybe 2 years ago asking me for advice on how to acquire sponsorships. And in the email, they were like, oh, I see you're sponsored by blank company. And, you know, that's so cool. And asking for advice. I'm like, all right, cool. This is awesome. I love helping people. Right. And then when it came to YouTube and I started taking off for my problematic views, this same person gets on social media and starts tagging that same sponsor to get me dropped from my contract. Yeah. And so going back to what you said earlier about kind of just like, you know, putting someone in their place, I had to do that. So I took that screenshot and I tweeted at them. I said, oh, weren't you the person that emailed me a few years ago asking for advice on how to get a sponsorship, and now you're trying to get my sponsorship to drop me? She deleted her account. So
the receipts. Yeah, the receipts. I've had that before. Sometimes it's even in the same DM thing, because someone will DM you a few years ago, and then, you know, if they DM you again, the old one is still up there.
Yeah.
So I've had ones where, you know, someone sent me something very like positive and complimentary, like in, I don't know, 2019. And then I get another one and I'm like, oh, wait, hang on. I scroll up and I'm like, oh, I had one guy like in 2019 messaging me about how much he likes my music and how dope what I'm doing is or whatever. Then I got another one. He literally was telling me my music sucks and I should stop rapping and whatever. I scroll up and I'm like, and I'm like, bro, you can disagree with my politics, but let's not pretend that I suddenly suck at rapping because you don't agree with my politics anymore.
That's so stupid.
Yeah, and I don't think people realize that they do that.
Yeah, no, it's weird. And it's also another thing that I kind of had trouble with adjusting, and I think I'm going to have to adjust more to it now with me growing a lot on YouTube, is when I was on Twitch, a lot of people, you know, I would go to this thing called TwitchCon, which is like an event just for streamers on that particular platform. And there was a lot of people that would run up to me and like, oh my God, Gothics, can I take a picture with you? Like, I'd have so many people just wanting to take photo ops. And then after I made the transition to YouTube and announced that I voted for Trump, instantly, I want to say 90% of the people I took photos with were just like, I hate her. I'm like,
wow.
And so that makes me think either you didn't know much about me, but you were so infatuated with me, whether it's because of my numbers or because you thought I was going to help you grow on Twitch or whatever. Or I don't know what I can never imagine dropping someone just because of who they voted for. It's so weird to me. But yeah, So now it's like I have to get kind of used to this whole thing of people that may like me may not really like me. So it's a matter of trying to find a balance of I want to get to know my audience, but also kind of keep them at a distance because I've already done this before.
Yeah, yeah. Do you know the secret to that, though, is truly being yourself?
Yeah.
Truly being yourself, right? Like, I one trick I do, and I don't know if people aren't probably aware of this, but one thing I do, especially on Twitter, is I will say things that, like, I want everyone who follows me to disagree with me on some things. Right. Mm-hmm. So I will intentionally sometimes say something that I'm like, all right, I actually want, because I like to see how people respond to disagreement. Right. If I say one thing you disagree with and you're like, oh, unfollowed. Like, I used to like you, but you said one thing out of 100,000 that I don't like, unfollow. Right. If you're like that, then I'm like, okay, well, I don't want you here. Like, you weren't a real fan to begin with. Right. If I go say one thing you don't like and all of a sudden you don't like me anymore, you were never a real fan, friend, whatever it is. If we can disagree and you can be like, I don't agree with this one, but I still like you, then I'm like, okay, cool, right? That's not a fair weather person because they're not just there for you to be their mouthpiece. They actually like and respect you and your own opinions. And I think a big mistake a lot of creators make is they paint themselves into a corner where they are then held hostage by their own audience. Mm. And people can do this in a lot of different areas. I mean, as a musician, for example, I've had people ask me, you know, I am a Christian, and I've had people ask me, why do you not label and market yourself as a Christian rapper? And actually, one reason for that is because it's putting myself, there's a couple reasons for it, but it's putting myself into a box where actually I can then even be held hostage by my own audience. Because then if I make a song where I don't mention Jesus, or I don't, you know, mention something overtly religious, then, or even maybe I make a song with an artist who's, you know, secular, and all of a sudden people are attacking me now because I'm not doing exactly what they want. And I don't like that. It's also why I don't associate myself actually with any political organization, right? I'm not a member of any political party. I don't, you know, I will collaborate with people, but I'm not like the mouthpiece of this group or this organization or this whatever, because then you're forced into that box. And if they disagree with something you say, or you disagree with one of their positions or something, it becomes very weird and awkward, because then you're just supposed to toe this line and you can end up in this situation. That's how people get canceled, right? They get canceled because they create a certain audience, and then as soon as they deviate, you know, they get turned on. And yeah. So one thing I really love about my audience is that virtually cannot happen. I can't get canceled because my audience would not cancel me. The only way I could get canceled is if I became like really fake. Like if I actually like went super woke and I started going against all my ideals or whatever, you know, or I started like, I don't know, shilling masks and like vaxes to myself. I think the way you're building your audience now, I think you're going to be pretty cancel proof.
Yeah, I wish I had done that from the get, because I'm not a different person. I just self-censored myself at the beginning because I just had these invisible rules in my head. Just don't talk about things that people would normally fight about. But that's not my responsibility. You know what I mean? I should be able to talk about things without people acting irrationally. So I'm doing that now, and I'm seeing the results of me doing that now. And I just wish I went into this earlier with a different mindset.
No doubt. Well, at least you've done it now. It's a great position to be, where you can literally be yourself and be honest and be open and actually speak your mind, and that rewards you rather than punishes you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah, it's very good. And I know people paint themselves in these corners. I've had so many messages, DMs, emails from people in all sorts of spaces, tech, entertainment, you know, corporate, whatever, where, you know, they're essentially being held hostage now, right? Like, they're not even, they're like, Zuby, I voted for Trump, but I can't tell you. there's people who follow me on Twitter, but they don't actually follow me because they're so scared that people will see that they're following that scary Zuby guy, and they're going to be, you know, judged or canceled literally just for following me or liking my tweets. So I actually have way more followers than it shows, because some people won't hit that follow button because they're that scared. And that shows where we are.
That's understandable. I've had some messages like that where people will give me praise in DMs. And then I'm like, how come you don't do this publicly? I mean, thank you, but like, why not public?
It's so crazy. It's like, you know, like Ben Shapiro has all these like lefty and liberal friends who like won't be seen with him in public. Like for them to meet each other, they have to, you know, like they won't take photos together and stuff. Not because he cares, but because like they don't want to get canceled.
And that's so weird. I can't live like that. I can't.
No, me neither. So what have you got? What have you got coming up next? Are you just going to be focusing on your YouTube channel? You said you've got a documentary coming out.
Yeah. So a small company reached out to me a few months ago before I even hit 100K on YouTube, saying that they wanted to make a documentary about my journey, pretty much. And so I believe that's done filming, unless something else is going to happen. But it's done filming and they're editing right now. So I think they said they're going to try to get it out this year. Aside from that, I am going to start making more content and also just kind of branching my voice out into different areas, because I think my shtick is going to fall back on culture. I'm really interested in culture in general and the way that people think and make decisions and stuff. I really like that. So I'm trying to build just a small team of people to kind of help me with the production. Because I really want to go far with this. I'm definitely new to this sort of commentating space, but I don't know. I like it. And I think it's due. I think it's time that more voices pop up, because I've been seeing what's been brewing in the political YouTube space for a few years and I'm not impressed. So, not just saying just me, but in general, like I'm seeing a lot of new creators start using their voice all of a sudden, and I'm loving it. So I'm here for the ride.
Awesome. No doubt. You're going to be successful. Like I say, you've got the mindset. You just maintain that and just keep going. And, you know, you've already hit success, but it's guaranteed. It's going to just keep growing. You just got to keep going.
Thank you. Thank you. And it's really, by the way, it's really odd that I'm having this conversation with you, because I will say one amazing thing that came out of all of this weird polarizing that we've been seeing in society after elections is that I've met a lot of amazing people within the last year, and you were someone that I would watch your content all the time, hear your music, and I'm like, this guy is dope, and I'm having a conversation with you right now. And I think that it's a sign of just that winner's mindset, not, you know, always focused on skin color or the oppression and stuff like that. I think if you let that go and just let it be, oh, it's so much fun. So much better. Yes. So yeah, thank you. Thank you for inviting me on your channel.
You're so welcome. It's been so good to speak to you. And where can people, for people listening, where can they follow you online?
Yeah, so you can follow me at Gothics TV on YouTube. I also have a podcast, which I interviewed Zuby on, called Subtweet This, also on YouTube. But you can find me there, and also Twitter at Gothics TV.
Awesome. Gothics, so good to talk to you.
Hey, thank you so much. You as well.
Sick and I'm destined for fame.